Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
You know, I also want to add to this conversation now Columbia University law professor Patricia Williams, who writes the Mad Law Professor column for The Nation. Professor Williams, welcome back to WNYC.
Good morning.
And you're on with Rosanna Rosato, the publisher and CEO of El Diario La Prensa. And you wanted to react to some of what Rosanna was saying, right?
Oh, I just wanted to endorse it. I do think that it's very interesting the way in which she, as you point out, she's been reduced to being a Hispanic icon, and there is something reductive about that. At the same time, it is important that she is this, that she performs this symbolic role. But what I think is missing from this is the fact that she's also one of very few women of her generation, that she is the product not just of a time when there was good public housing, but there were also good public schools, that she represents, she is an icon of specific social movements, of the piggybacked civil rights movements. You know, she's a representative of the immigration movement. She's you know, the result of the barriers, the exclusivity of gendered universities like Princeton and like Yale Law School. This is she's a celebration of the diversity.
What do you mean by gendered? She went to Princeton undergrad, Yale Law.
Yes,
what do you mean by gendered?
I mean, at the time she's 3 years younger than I am. Those schools had just become co-ed. Those were schools that were still very much, I mean, when I went to law school, we still, you know, I think they did away with it my first year of law school, something called Ladies' Day, which is that they would only call you one day a month and then they would make fun of you. I mean, I think Ruth Bader Ginsburg has talked about this. And so her inspiration, I think, has many, many points of connection. You know, Hispanic is certainly one of them, Latina, Puerto Rican, but she's also, you know, I think that she represents all of a series of doors having been broken down. When I started teaching, there were only 6 women of color in the entire United States in legal academia. There were 4 African Americans, 1 Asian American, and 1 Latina, and our numbers in the judiciary were just as few. And I think that, you know, we have this moment in which what I've called elsewhere the first Afro-Hawaiian, Kansas, Kenyan American president makes this appointment. You know, we let us discuss her as the first, you know, public housing, you know, public educated, you know, early member of
Princeton,
you know,
Yale.
Exactly. There are lots of ways.
Non-immigrant,
in which
we
should celebrate
by the way, non-immigrant, Puerto Rico.
No, but that's true. That's true. That's, you're right. I'm sorry. But in terms of the general category of the degree to which, you know, what she symbolizes has resonance for the presence of the Spanish language, the Spanish culture, Latino, Latin American, Central American culture in our country, I think it says something really significant and positive.
Rosanna?
Well, I, you know, I think it's also, I agree with Professor Williams. I think, you know, and I think you made a comment, Brian, that whether I thought it was reductive or not. And I think, I mean, the way we view it or the way I view it, I think everything else in terms of her experience, her intelligence, you know, her capabilities is unquestioned. And so that to describe her, you know, to say that he appointed, you know, a judge, you know, it's kind of obvious. I think that the headline is that this is historic, and I think that's one of the main reasons. I mean, I think that's one of the biggest reasons why, because she's so qualified, why Obama, you know, why she would have won, you know, kind of any race. She was always in the running. She was always in the top 4, in the top 3, is because Obama has clearly expressed his desire to, not just to make history, but to help make history for others.
And call me a conspiracy theorist, but when I see the headline on El Diario that says Suprema, I see it as we've arrived. When I see it on the cover of the New York Post, I see it as they're taking over.
Well, that's probably, there's probably some truth to that, and I'm comfortable with that.
And go ahead, Rosanna.
This is Pat, actually. I mean, my sense is that she, her qualifications have been unquestioned as of yet, but this is going to be, you know, to some degree a battle. And I think that you see this in some of the blogosphere in which people say, well, she, you know, she's good, but not great. She's, okay, solid, but not impressive.
And we'll talk more about that with you after a break and after Rosanna goes. But Rosanna Rosetto from El Diario, before you go, I know you also follow New York politics, so just give me a word about Anthony Weiner dropping out of the mayoral race today. Are you surprised? I mean, this is so unusual. The Democratic mayoral primaries are always chock full of leading characters from the party. But no longer this year, with just Bill Thompson, who is leading, and Tony Avella, who is a relatively minor player in the party. What do you make of it?
You know, I think it's, you know, I do think it's sad that it seems that nobody actually wants to run for mayor except for the mayor. I just don't think you see the burning passion to do this. And I like races. You know, I like primaries. I like it when voters have choices, or, you know, at least can compare, you know, one candidate against the other.
All right. And we will, of course, come back to this topic in subsequent days. We hope to have Anthony Weiner on tomorrow or the next day. Rosanna Rosetto, editor. I keep saying editor. You're a publisher and
I'm
CEO.
I'm a very happy publisher of El Diario La Prensa.
In New York. And you can see their coverage of the Sonia Sotomayor nomination today. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Papa.
And we will continue and look more closely at some of Judge Sotomayor's rulings, including some interesting situations in which she's been overturned by higher courts. We'll do that with Patricia Williams from the Columbia Law School in a minute. And will Sonia Sotomayor be confirmed by the Senate? Just ask a senator who voted against her confirmation to the appeals court.
Not certain that it will, but I couldn't say that otherwise. And thank God there's journalists like you that reminded me I voted against her years ago, because I didn't remember that.
Let's just say Charles Grassley of Iowa may not be the only Republican senator with amnesia and an open mind, given the politics of the moment. He was on All Things Considered yesterday. So let's look at more of Judge Sotomayor's legal record now with Columbia University law professor Patricia Williams. She also writes the Mad Law Professor column for The Nation. And Judge Sotomayor has made about 4,000 rulings is the number that I've read. How do you begin to discern a judicial identity out of so much work?
Well, I think that there are others who have actually read all 4,000 opinions or who are more familiar with the details of these cases, but you can cull from them a sense of you know, what in any other era might be called conservatism, but given the extraordinary move to the right in the last 20 years of the court, many have tended to call liberal. But I think for the most part, her rulings are fair, they're judicious, they are thoughtful, and not strikingly progressive, which is a disappointment to some people.
In fact, they're thoroughly
reasoned.
Some people who are Obama supporters,
yes,
are actually disappointed in this nomination because they were hoping for someone who would be that intellectual counterweight to Scalia, to be that real articulator of progressive values from the bench at a high conceptual level. If anything, we hear that she, Sotomayor, is a little, you know, skeptical of high concept judicial presence, and so some people wanted somebody in that other category.
Well, I think that that's a misplaced hope, both based on political reasons in terms of the approval process, but also I think that it places a great deal of emphasis on the pyrotechnics that Scalia embodies. Scalia is an activist judge. a lot of people don't like to describe it in that direction, in that way. But he has actually been a more activist judge than many we have had in recent years.
How are you defining activist?
I mean, somebody who doesn't necessarily follow precedent, and just Bush v. Gore, for example. I mean, the right wing of the court has actually been more activist than in some holdings than
than ever in our history.
Or that doesn't defer to Congress, this case of the Voting Rights Act that the court may throw out part of the Voting Rights Act. It was approved by Congress almost unanimously. And yet the high court, certainly with Scalia going to be on that side and Chief Justice Roberts going to be outside, is going to say, no, Congress, we know better.
So in that sense, I'm not sure that, I, as somebody who's generally considered pretty progressive, and I guess, sort of centrist Democrat myself, I would not, I wouldn't necessarily want the equivalent of a Scalia, of any ideology.
The case everyone's talking about is now before the Supreme Court, involving a firefighter's test in New Haven that was thrown out by the city as biased after it failed to have enough people of color pass it. Sotomayor upheld the city's decision to void the test. A group of mostly white plaintiffs who passed the test is saying they were discriminated against. What's at stake here as you see it?
Well, I think actually that this case is perceived as being more significant in terms of her ruling. I mean, it's a significant case in terms of her ruling than it might be. I mean, her decision was part of an en banc decision, and in that sense, it was fairly narrow. What she says in that opinion. What the opinion means in the larger sense is. I think that there are questions for the continuation of affirmative action, which has been whittled down to many degrees in recent years.
She's getting criticized for dismissing the reverse discrimination claim without engaging the legal arguments. It was like a paragraph, I'm not going to hear this. It concerned some people that she saw a complex issue of racial law as open and shut.
Well, again, I think she saw that based on fairly narrow procedural grounds rather than actually openly addressing. And again, I think that is evidence of her, what some might call conservative tendencies, what I would rather call her centrist tendency. She's a technician of the law. She is fair. She's somebody who takes the letter of the law quite seriously.
And we see that in other cases, like another civil rights case where she blocked a black couple from filing a race discrimination suit against an airline. And her reason was the flights were governed by international law, not U.S. law. And so that's a technical, a technical judge looks at that.
Yes.
And some have concluded in the Wall Street Journal today, there's kind of a conclusion that she's relatively a pro-business judge.
She certainly was a corporate lawyer among her many, many kinds of experience. she was a corporate lawyer. And I think that it's fair to say that her civil cases are fairly mundane, fairly straightforward. There is nothing terribly remarkable about them. At the same time, I think that in her refusal to accept a pure cost-benefit analysis in an environmental case, for example, that there are equal numbers of people who would say that she's not so pro-business. I mean, certainly there were business organizations, particularly energy companies and companies that are accused of polluting, who would object to what is clearly not an entirely libertarian sense of the role of business when it comes to balancing it against public interests like the environment.
Right. That's a ruling I was somewhat familiar with. I think the Clean Water Act tends to be relatively clear that you cannot take cost into effect when protecting people's health via the drinking water. You just have to protect it. Mm-hmm. That's the way the law is written. But I want to bring up another one. This one is not making much news, but it's really interesting to me. She once ruled that federal contractors could be sued for violating constitutional rights as if they were federal officials. Now, she got overturned on that. But it seems to me that that's a relevant case, given Halliburton and other private contractors' role in the Iraq War. Do you see that as an important ruling?
Remind me which case this is.
Well, I don't remember the plaintiffs, and it was before the Iraq War, so it's a relatively old case. But it seems that maybe it reveals something about her mindset. If you know, and again, she got overturned on this, but she, in her judicial view, federal contractors could be sued for violating constitutional rights as if they were federal officials.
Is this the inmate case that you're talking about, in which they sued, inmates sued a private corporation that was operating a private prison?
I believe so.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I think that would probably less be considered a business case than. But
right.
You're right. It's the.
Yeah, it's a constitutional responsibility.
Yes,
who's seen
absolutely.
As the government?
It's the ability to outsource.
With impunity under
with
the
impunity.
Law.
With impunity, yeah.
And I want to ask you about one other thing. This is from our webpage. A listener asks, I've seen it mentioned in a bunch of bios that she specialized in intellectual property law, among other things. Could you please expand on this a bit if you're familiar with it and tell us where she stands on file sharing, et cetera? I don't know that she's ruled on file sharing per se.
And I don't know what she has to say about that, but I do think that perhaps what they're referring to is that it's part of her practice, both civilly and I believe when she was a prosecutor under Morgenthau, she worked in copyright protection. There's that famous and delightful story of her going down to Chinatown to protect Fendi following through on warrants for counterfeit handbags, and as the counterfeiters tried to flee, she hops on a motorcycle and gives chase. This is quite a woman. but I think that that's the level at which I'm familiar with her particular record on that.
All right. Last thing, labor. She's famous for the baseball strike case in 1994, and Obama was playing it as a sports thing yesterday.
Yeah.
But really, if you look at it, it's a labor rights
case. Absolutely. It's a contract thing,
Because the owners were unilaterally breaking an agreement during a strike when no contract was in force. And I just wonder if you think that has implications beyond baseball.
I do think that it actually is a wonderful case in terms of the way in which she balanced the interest of what are technically private parties, the baseball players as opposed to the owners or the management, but also the status of this particular industry, which has a both a symbolic role and a public function a public interest, that is to say, the way in which baseball, as you know, has so many ramifications for other businesses and for and I think that her analysis of that is a wonderful insight into a woman that is, and again, a little bit like the environmental case. It's certainly not the same kind of public interest that we talk about when we talk about the environment or public health. But she takes into account the impact of cases, particularly even when they are private entities, but have large-scale impacts on the public well-being or collective. And I think that that's a wonderful attitude in a judge because she does it fairly. She does it. She doesn't do it ad hoc. It's not from the. And again, this is another reason I criticize some of what goes on in the media. It is as though her experience is all about being Latina, or it's all about, you know, sort of 40 years ago coming up from the cotton fields of the South Bronx. Her experience is one that is balanced. It's that of a scholar. It's of a law review editor. It is of somebody who's done both civil and criminal law. Her experience is extraordinarily broad, broader than any possible Supreme Court nominee we've had in years or ever. And all of that is her professional experience. Her experience is not simply something like a kumbaya moment in which she empathizes. She's balanced. And so that's, I think, my optimism about
her. And it's interesting, and we'll leave it here for now, that the criticism against her from conservative critics is really based on things that she said in speeches and not on the rulings that she's made from the bench. And I think that's a pretty important distinction as the discussion goes forward. And this is just the beginning of this conversation, obviously. They hope to get Sotomayor confirmed by early August, so other things will emerge. We will touch other things that we've mentioned here and go into more depth on them in subsequent conversations. And I want to thank Patricia Williams, Columbia University law professor. She writes the Mad Law Professor column in The Nation. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Brian Lehrer and WNYC. Another law professor next. We'll touch again on Sotomayor. Also on the fact that the Riverdale bomb case defendants met in prison. And this law professor advocates what's called jury nullification in some cases. Stay with us.